welcome to Musings on Golf, where terrific Solheim Cup stories from the great Dottie Pepper make for winning ways in this episode. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my good buddy Bob Bupka. And Robert, we begin an unprecedented two-week stretch of the biggest team events in golf being played in Europe, with the 18th Solheim Cup this week in Spain, and not too many better than our friend Dottie to give us all a feel for how big these matches are.
Well, you're right on the money there, Kelly. Dottie, so gracious of her time. You know, she's a superstar on CBS television right now, and yeah, we love her on Musings on Golf and appreciated what she did for us. But you're right about that. I mean, two big events. We got the Solheim Cup, which we're going to talk about, and then, of course, the Ryder Cup coming up after that. The Solheim Cup this year can be played in Spain, and they're very excited about that. I mean, Spain, I've been there many times, played a lot of golf there, Kelly, and it's just a country that loves its sport. Of course, the fire was fueled a lot by Seve Ballesteros, one of the greatest golfers ever to live.
Sure. Well, and the Europeans, Bob, have a lot to be fired up about right now. They've won the last two Solheim Cups. They're trying to win this beautiful trophy for an unprecedented third straight time. The name of the facility, it's Finca Cortesan in Andalusia, Spain. It's where the Volvo World Match Play Championship on the DP World Tour has been played the last 3 years. You know, Bob, you asked Dottie a question, as our listeners will hear, about the Solheims themselves. And I wonder, before we get into the Solheim Cup, a little bit of the history, could you talk about Karsten and his lovely wife and their unbelievable impact on the game of golf?
I gladly do that, Kelly. And Dottie certainly has some good words to say about them during our interview with her. But I feel very strongly that Karsten and Louise Solheim may be two of the sweetest souls that I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, and what they have done for ladies golf with their dedication and the manufacturing of their great product, Ping, I'm so happy that, you know, right now Victor Hovland plays Ping, and boy, he's destined to be a superstar, and pretty good chance he will come away as the star of the Ryder Cup when it's held in Italy in 2 weeks.
I don't think anybody would be surprised if that were the case. As for the women, Suzanne Pedersen leads the Europeans in. Eight of the 12 Europeans are ranked in the top 40 in the Rolex Women's World Golf Rankings. The U.S. team also very strong, but also very young. And that's going to be a real challenge for the U.S. team. They have five rookies. Rose Zhang, Lilian Vu are the two top ones. But our side, if you will, is going to be up against it. I think, you know, it's momentum, right, Bob? We talk about momentum for the Europeans on the men's side, but right now, just based on play this year on the LPGA Tour and over in Europe, the women are a little bit stronger on the European side.
You know what's fascinating about both the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup? When I talk to players, prior to playing in their first team event, they think it's going to be a big deal. They know it's going to be a big deal, but not one has ever said to me, it wasn't as big a deal as I thought it was. It was just the reverse. They think it's unbelievable. And that's what makes it tough. Boy, you got to get up on that first tee. You're representing your country. You're not representing you. And when your name is announced and the crowd goes wild, then you got to pull the trigger on that first drive. Boy, it's not easy, but it's an experience that I know for a fact from getting this from so many different players, an experience they remember the rest of their lives.
I do like the fact that Stacey Lewis, who's been a terrific player on the LPGA Tour for many years, major champion, is the captain, steady hand. She's even been quoted as saying, I just think Europe is really, really strong. they've got all the momentum in the event right now. Now that's the fun part though, Bob, because sometimes, you know, that you position yourself as the underdog, which it looks like the U.S. is doing, maybe that gives them that fighting edge that they may not have otherwise. It's good. I think I mentioned about the five rookies. I think that's good. You're seeing some of that with the men next week as well. You have to get that fresh blood coming in. And certainly in the case of Rose Zhang, she brings a lot of firepower to her game for the U.S.
Well, you have to keep in mind the greatest Solheim Cup player ever and the greatest Ryder Cup player ever. Guess what? They were rookies once. So you have to go through this, and it's just a wonderful experience. And each captain always traditionally likes to make the other team the favorite. There seems to be an added sweetness to coming from behind in these cup competitions. And so the captains try and position their teams as underdogs. And obviously you can't have two underdogs in a two-team match.
Well, as you'll hear from Dottie, she, no matter how she portrayed herself, underdog or favorite, she was really good in Solheim Cup. She was 13-5-2 overall. She was 5-1 in singles, which goes to show you how much of a tough competitor she was. So we'll have Dottie on in just a bit. Really excited to have four-time European captain Tony Jacklin joining us next week as we prepare for the Ryder Cup in Italy. And speaking of that, look, the Europeans really, they didn't win the event last week, the BMW, but all 12 of their players made the cut, Bob. And all 12 of them really played well. Tyrrell Hatton tied for second, Rahm fourth, Hovland fifth, Fleetwood sixth, Rory tied for seventh. This kid, Ludvig Åberg, led after 54 holes, ended up tying for 10th along with Sepp Straka. Again, it appears that their game is peaking at the right time, at least in tournament competition. We'll see how it plays out in match play.
And this may sound crazy to our listeners, but Åberg only turned professional June. Now he's on a Ryder Cup team, and he has a chance with his talent to come away as the star in Italy. That's how good he is. I mean, this is a phenom. This is a generational player. Players with this level of talent don't come along too often. Probably the last one to come aboard with that kind of talent had to be none other than Tiger Woods. I mean, Åberg, you got to keep an eye on him. Yeah. He's young, and he doesn't know how to lose. And I'm hearing a great ambassador for the sport. That's the part I like the most.
Yeah, it's a rising star. Really happy, by the way, for New Zealand's Ryan Fox. He ended up sort of stealing the show at the BMW PGA Championship on the DP World Tour, holding off that European contingent that was so strong. And then the sort of the restart, if you will, or the last events of this year on the PGA Tour. Really, really happy for Saheth Theegala winning at the Fortinet Championship. His first victory on tour, Bob. Ends up a two-stroke win over S.H. Kim. And I think really important as well to see Justin Thomas play well. Finished four shots back, 15 under par. That bodes well, particularly for a guy, yourself included. A lot of people are wondering why in the world he's on the Ryder Cup team. Let's hope for the U.S. cause that these are really positive signs.
Well, certainly a small step in the right direction. Of course, playing in that event and playing in the Ryder Cup, two completely different levels of pressure. Anyway, about Saheth's win, but I really got a kick out of it. He's not married, he's single. So normally the wife and children of the player that wins come out on the green. Well, he had his parents come out on the green.
That's great.
That just warmed the heart. And I thought that was really good and speaks well for him. This guy's 25 years old. He only turned pro in 2022. Turned pro in 2020. Now he's earned over $10 million after 74 tournaments. Quite a record. One career win, two seconds, one third. 54 out of his 74 starts, he's made the cup. 31st in FedEx and 29th already in the world ranking. we may have a superstar on our hands here in Mr. Thagalia.
Yeah, I know, Bob. That's the thing. You know, I think in 2 years, he very well could be on the U.S. Ryder Cup team at Bethpage Black on Long Island, which you your backyard. You know it very, very well. But for him, let's hear what he had to say on his first victory on the PGA Tour and what it meant.
It doesn't feel real. It's probably not going to set in for a while, but man, that was a lot of good golf, and that was some of the most fun I've ever had in my life. I mean, I had so many family and friends cheering me on, and just the support I have is mind-blowing. I go to bed at night these last few days, I'm like, I can't believe how many people are cheering for me and rooting for me. But man, this feeling is incredible, and I couldn't have done it without my whole team and everyone out here. I mean, this is such a team effort, and for me to just put it together like this, it means the world. It means the world to me.
Well, you can relate to that, Kelly, because you got an awful lot of people cheering the arrival of a book that you're just completing. Why don't you give a little tease about that book right here?
Oh, you're too good. Yeah, the good folks over at Old Florida Golf Club in Naples, a really special 18-hole facility Reese Jones designed, have asked me to write a 30th anniversary book for the members of their club, and we're closing in on the final edits of that. It's going to be a 96-page coffee table book, Bob, and appreciate you bringing that up. It's something that is turning into an absolutely beautiful piece. I know the members at this club, including Coach Mike Ditka, one of the founding members at Old Florida, are going to be very, very proud. And it's, for me, Bob, it's something that I've had a real passion about doing. I'm a good writer, and this has elevated me in a lot of ways to really overseeing an entire production of a big time project. So it's a good feeling.
And I was thrilled to death that you got to work with Reese Jones, probably one of the nicest guys in all of golf, and has been that way. Extremely talented. His golf courses are all over the world, and yeah. I spoke to him just the other day. He's still very, very busy, and that's a good sign. Good luck on that book. Can't wait to get a copy myself.
You shall indeed. And we're going to hear in just a moment from Dottie Pepper, who knows all about playing well on good golf courses, right after this.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, the Solheim Cup, the biggest team event in women's golf, will take place this weekend in Spain. And our special guest today represented the United States in the first six Solheim Cups, going a stellar 13-5-2 in her matches. And she's with us to talk about her many experiences in match play at the highest of levels. And you also know her for the great on-course work she consistently delivers for CBS Sports. Dottie Pepper, welcome to Musings on Golf.
Thanks, Kelly. I really look forward to spending some good time with you and Bob this morning.
All right, Kelly, we're all excited about having Dottie Pepper back on Musings on Golf. And Dottie, before we even get started, my thoughts went right back to Louise and John Solheim. Could you share a little bit for our listeners how important that couple has been for ladies golf?
I don't think the LPGA would be where it is today without their influence, and part of it. Sure. I mean, you can look to the event in Phoenix that has roots back to them filling an important hole on the calendar for the LPGA in a really important market at an important part of the year when you're talking, you know, into March and early April sometimes. But I think their support of the LPGA players just by equipment was huge in the beginning, because there was kind of a desert around women having great equipment and equipment that was fit for them and to be under contract with a top quality company. So they stepped in a big sort of way there. And then of course, in 1990, the concept of a women's version of the Ryder Cup was brought before them. And they didn't hesitate a bit. And even when Carsten had passed, Louise and the rest of the family never stopped supporting it. And in fact, the support's only grown.
Very, very special people.
Yeah.
Knew them both very well. Dottie, you represented the U.S. in each of the first six Solheim Cups. What was the level of excitement like for you and the team heading into that first match at Lake Nona in Orlando?
Well, interesting, because we didn't know what to expect, and we didn't even know this was happening. So it was during the McDonald's Championship at DuPont in June that it was announced at a mandatory player meeting, and it wasn't just a player meeting about this announcement about what would be the Solheim Cup, but it was just there were two of them, sometimes three a year, that everyone was, you had to be there or get your checkbook out and you're going to get fined. So everybody was there. But we found out, we were told about this Solheim Cup and the fact that points had already started to accrue going back to the beginning of the year. And that was only, for me, 4 years removed, not even 4 years removed, from being on a Curtis Cup team that had been absolutely waxed at Prairie Dunes in Hutchinson, Kansas. And I, you know, my antenna went up, and how do I make this team? And how do I add tournaments to my schedule? And where do I need to play well? And how much is that worth? And certainly not a monetary situation, but how many points, you know, how do I get myself onto this team? And personally, it came down to me getting the ball up and in from just inside 150 yards at Killarn Country Club, Tallahassee, in the Centel Classic, to get the last of the guaranteed spots, because it was pretty much assumed, based upon interest level, upon how the team was sorting out as far as rankings, that Nancy Lopez would get the pick. And she did. And I got that seventh spot because there were only eight players on each side for the inaugural at Lake Nona. Wow.
Best seventh pick in the history of the sport.
You know, Dottie, at the outset, I mentioned your overall Solheim Cup record. But boy, in singles matches, you were awfully tough to beat. 5-1 in your career in singles. I just wondered, did you feel in general, with your style of play, your makeup as a competitor, that you were almost really made for match play at that level?
I actually hated match play. I really did. Until the Solheim Cup came around, I just had a couple of not so great experiences where I really beat someone pretty badly stroke play and lost the match. That's the nature of match play, because you come to realize that each hole is its own event. And when it's gone, it's gone. It's not a cumulative all day thing. But I think I really started to embrace match play for what it truly is when Joanne Carter was captain in 94. And Joanne's philosophy was just go win the first hole. Get yourself in a winning mindset, and whatever happens beyond that, keep your foot on the pedal. And that stuck with me in the biggest sort of way. But that first team was also guided by, and the second team was Kathy Whitworth. And Witt's philosophy was also a phenomenal one. And it was, with a team like we had, especially the first team, it was loaded with Hall of Famers, or people who have now become Hall of Famers. And the expectation was to win, but her advice was to be aware that underdogs in situations like this will find a way to raise their game. So be prepared for people to play out of their minds. And sure enough, match one goes off in November of 1990, and it's Pat Bradley and Nancy Lopez in the leadoff group, and they got beat.
Huh.
Witt was sure as heck right.
Wow.
Hey, Dottie, a general question about match play. In your opinion, what are the things that one must do to be successful in match play? And whether it's at the Solheim Cup or even, say, in playing to try to win your club championship?
I think it's a person that's willing to forget quickly if you do have a bad hole and move on. It's also playing team match play. It's the philosophy that if I hit a bad shot, my partner knows I wasn't trying to do that, and we're just going to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and keep on going. I think resilience is absolutely the key to match play. And once you get an opponent down, to never give them, don't give them a free ride. Make, if you're going to lose a hole, make somebody play exceptional golf in order to get that one hole win. You don't want to be throwing holes away with sloppy play or bad thought making, thought process. Because as we know over the years with these cup matches, it can come down to half points and every little bit matters.
It sure does. And I know it matters to us. We're proud to be having the one and only Dottie Pepper with us on Musings on Golf. Dottie, you won two major championships. How was the pressure at representing your country in the Solheim Cup different from trying to win majors?
It's very different in a sense that you're wearing your country's colors and you're also competing with teammates instead of against people on a 72 hole stroke play sort of platform. So it's completely different. And I know I had to plan extra time before the first match I would play. And I never did sit on a Friday morning. I always played in the first session. But I knew I had to have a little extra personal time in the morning because I was probably going to get sick. I was so wired and so fired up that I was not doing really well. And it was almost pointless to try to play the week after the Solheim Cup because there was just nothing left in the tank.
Wow. I'm sure our listeners, fascinating to hear. And it's only an indication to me of how dedicated and you have been to this sport. What was your most memorable Solheim Cup moment?
Really fortunate to have a lot of them. I think the first day at Lake Nona, I played in match two with Kathy Gehring as my partner, and we had played every practice round with her just, you know, being such a bulldog. And we're not laying up, we're not leaving putts short, we are just all in, all go, all week. And we're walking down the path to the first tee at Lake Nona, and she was slated to play off the odd numbered holes for our alternate shot four balls competition. And she stopped and she looked at me and she said, "I can't do it." And I said, "You can't do what?" And she said, "I can't hit the first tee shot." She said, I can't do it." I said, "Well, I guess I'm doing it then." And I think we went out and won 5-3 or something like that. We'd never played the golf course in that order with her playing off the evens and me playing off the odds. But it just shows sometimes you have to navigate a speed bump and just pick yourself up and, like I said, dust yourself off and go on. So that was a favorite because it completely came out of left field.
Well, we're headed to the closing holes of match play with Dottie Pepper here on Musings on Golf. Dottie, so much is made about the formation of a team and what it's like in the team room, so forth, at a major event like the Solheim Cup. Just wondering, how do you go from trying to beat other players week in and week out on the LPGA to then being teammates with them for a week? Is that difficult at all?
It's not very difficult because that cup means so much and you've worked so hard just to get on the team. It's not very difficult at all. I think one of the hardest things back when there was great difference between the golf balls was trying to figure out who was going to play with each in foursomes, because you needed to find a golf ball that you could predictably know what the trajectory, know what the spin, know what the sound and feel was going to be. I thought that was the hardest part. It had nothing to do with being in a team room or putting any angst between personalities aside. That was the biggest part, I think. That was the hardest adjustment of all.
Dottie, over your six Solheim Cups, you played for four different captains, terrific players all, Kathy Whitworth, Joanne Carner, Judy Rankin, and Pat Bradley. In your opinion, who was the best captain?
They're all very different. Like I said, Whit had came in very understated and just advised great players to expect to be swept up by an underdog's terrific play. I think Judy was probably overall the best captain because she defended her players in a lousy housing situation in Wales. And we also almost had like two captains when we had Judy, because Yippee was so invested in as a former football coach, there was that sort of a mentality. And so Judy was, you know, outwardly calm and inside a wreck. And Yippee was just all go all the time. And he brought a different look to it than you would see coming out of Judy. And I, you know, being where how we were housed at Muirfield Village, I got to see it firsthand because I stayed with them. We stayed in the house together. And it was a really hot week. And just for example, Judy's, you know, doing her Judy the mom thing and make sure everybody's happy and everybody's gotten to the tee on time. And the matches have gone off and it's extremely hot, hotter than you would ever imagine in Columbus in mid to late September. And we had run out of Gatorade. And you hear Yippee come across the radio to Judy going, Judy, GD it, get these girls some Gatorade. They're dying out here. and Pat Hurst, who is normally flow with anything, Judy took her a blue Gatorade and she said, I hate blue Gatorade. So those are the sort of things that happen behind the scenes that make you laugh in hindsight. But Judy was a great captain to just roll with.
No surprise there. Judy's great at everything. I have a couple of final questions for you, Dottie. The Solheim Cup being played this week in Spain. What was it like for playing a home Solheim Cup versus a road Solheim Cup?
Very, very different. The chanting didn't happen on the first tee at Lake Nona. I don't think people were, aware enough, or just we had identified our own thing. But the chanting started, I remember, in 96. Well, actually, no, I take that back, in 94 when we were at the Greenbrier. And it became like they were trying to get under your skin with the chanting by the time we got to 96 playing away for the first time. And then 98, it took a whole new sort of level, raised level when we were at Ohio, you know, in Columbus on a weekend that Ohio State was playing at home. And I think we outdrew them. It was for the week. It was pretty crazy. But it is very, very different because you kind of feel like you're more on in your own little bubble on an island, and your supporters mean even more because there's not the volume of them. So the theory was always when you were away to try to keep the home team quiet. If you were playing great, they weren't going to rah, rah, rah and cheer you on. But if you could keep the Europeans at bay and keep it quiet out there, you knew as an American side that you were playing great and kind of disrupting what they wanted, their party.
One last thing, Dottie Pepper, and it certainly has been a pleasure having the opportunity to speak with you about the Solheim Cup. You are a very fiery competitor. Did anybody ever refer to you as the Pepper Pot?
Not that I can recall, no.
Oh, so I'm the first. No. I'm going to be the first.
Okay. Okay, you're it. No.
Oh, Dottie, I'm on behalf of Kelly Elbin and yours truly, we thank you so much for your time and keen insight, and enjoy this time off that you got coming. Well earned, my friend.
We'll do, and I look forward to chatting with you all again. But I also really look forward to watching the Solheim Cup and the Ryder Cup over these next couple of weeks. What a back to back set for golf! Tremendous.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Dottie. It's going to be an exciting 2 weeks for the game of golf in general, for golf fans, and particularly to see an event like the Solheim Cup being played in the first time in Spain, and for the Ryder Cup the following week to be being played the first time in Italy. A lot of buzz, a lot of excitement for golf.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
You know, Bob, we know her very well for such great work that she does with CBS Sports coverage of the PGA Tour and major championships. But in her day, Bob, Dottie Pepper, you know, as good as there was on the LPGA Tour.
Yeah, you know, the amazing thing, after doing the interview with her, and I was thinking back, you know, her early years on the LPGA Tour, she's very shy. Matter of fact, didn't really enjoy talking to the media. And, you know, and I remember one of the first interviews I did with her, she was gracious enough to do it, but I could sense how uncomfortable she was. And now she's come full cycle. She is a very, very powerful voice in the world of professional golf. And we were honored to have Dottie Pepper here on Musings on Golf.
How about her saying that she really didn't care that much for match play at first, but then once she got a taste of it, certainly at the Solheim Cup level, it was a different ballgame for her, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. She realized that she could control her own destiny. You know, beat your opponent, you win the match.
Well, we thank Dottie Pepper very much. We hope everybody enjoys the 18th playing of the Solheim Cup this week in Spain. Get up early to watch it. And then next week, really excited to have four-time European Ryder Cup captain, the man who was really responsible for helping turn the Ryder Cup in so many ways towards the European side, as it's been now for a while. Tony Jacklin's going to be with us as we prepare for the 44th Ryder Cup in Rome. My good friend Bob Bupka, Kelly Elvin signing off, Musings on Golf.